Live from Utrecht, this is Bitcoin
Explained.
There you go, Sjors. How are you?
Excellent.
Back in good old Utrecht, we were both in London.
That's right.
Planning to record some episodes there, but then everybody got COVID.
Yes, and also it's a conference, so it's always a bit difficult to record.
So, back in Utrecht, and we're going to discuss a blog post. Well, we're going to discuss a concept that was described in a blog post by Jameson Lopp.
That's right.
He actually published a couple of blog posts about backwards compatibility, I guess, or syncing old nodes. That's really what the blog posts were about.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Bitcoin Core, of course, releases two new clients each year, or at least two new major releases each year, right?
Yeah, roughly.
And these blog posts were about syncing older Bitcoin Core nodes to see how fast they would actually sync to the current chain tip, right?
That's right.
And yeah. I think you've done similar research a couple years ago, is that right?
Yeah, so back in 2017, what I did was I took a couple of Amazon AWS machines. So these are just cloud machines.
Mm-hmm.
And install different versions of Bitcoin Core on those machines. And then just have them sync the Bitcoin blockchain as far as possible. And then I would just measure how long it would take. And there was some pretty big differences. And he's basically done that again. Probably slightly different, but the same idea and with more recent versions.
Right. Yeah,
and also with some older versions.
Yeah, so to be very specific, I already mentioned this, but there were basically two blog posts by Jameson, and the first one was really about syncing old nodes, and I would say the second one was actually mainly about backwards compatibility and forwards compatibility, which, you know, it's a related issue.
Yeah, and he also zoomed in on some of the really old nodes specifically, like the version 0.3, 0.4, 0.5. from many, many years ago, and how difficult it is to get these things to work at all.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's the backwards compatibility part, right?
Yeah, arguably. I mean, we can get into whether it's backwards compatibility or whether it's some other problems that he was running into.
Which we will get into.
Yes.
All right. First of all, for people that don't know this, what does that actually mean? What is backwards compatibility? Or short forwards compatibility, because sometimes the terms are sort of used interchangeably.
So I'm also going to be sloppy about it. The general idea is that you don't want to force people to upgrade their nodes, at least definitely not immediately. So older nodes should work well with newer nodes, and if you do a soft fork, you know, the new nodes will be able to, the old nodes will just keep working fine while other people upgrade to a new node.
Exactly. So like I mentioned, Bitcoin Core releases two new major releases every year, and the goal is that these new releases won't fall out of sync with older nodes, or the other way around, depending on how you look at it. The goal is to keep everyone in consensus, right?
Right,
including older nodes. Why do we think this is important?
Well, it's a very, you know, the multiple reasons for it, because you want to keep the system as voluntary as possible. There might be reasons why people are worried about installing new versions of Bitcoin Core. Maybe, you know, they want more people to review it. You know, if suddenly you have only 2 days to upgrade your node, maybe there's some malware in it, but if you wait a year, it's more likely somebody would have already found it.
Yeah, or maybe
Not possible to upgrade. Maybe you're busy doing other things, you know.
Yeah, maybe you want to fet the code yourself, right?
Yep.
Like, it's at least possible someone might want to do that, and that can take a little bit of time, and therefore it's important that they can keep using Bitcoin in the meantime.
Yeah, and companies, you know, that are running exchanges and whatever, they might be busy. They don't necessarily have, you know, they don't necessarily can do everything for you on January 1st of some year. So it's nice if they don't have to upgrade. Though it's always a good idea to upgrade, because you tend to stay up to date on security fixes and performance improvements.
Yeah, I would argue there's also kind of, we'll move on after this, but I would argue there's also kind of a philosophical reason. Like in our previous episode, we were discussing like very hypothetical situations where there's a chain split. And like if you're asking the question, what is actually Bitcoin, then it makes sense that older nodes that are still syncing, you know, someone never upgraded their node, why wouldn't that be Bitcoin, right? That was a big theme during the block size wars. Like, can you just change the protocol? And there was this argument about backwards compatibility that, you know, that philosophical argument that if old nodes still sync, then obviously that's still Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. And but as we'll find out now, there is some nuance to that argument, because trying to run a node from 12 years ago is not possible, probably.
For sure. Well, let's get into that right now, I think. Let's start there. So Jameson did these experiments with some older nodes. And when we say older, how old are we talking?
I think as old as 2012. Maybe even 2011.
Yeah, that era, 2011, 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
It was a pre-Bitcoin 0.7, right? I think, which one's the tryout? 4, 5, 6, 7?
Even 3.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Or 3, 4, 5, 6 in this latest
could be
blog post, right? Yeah. So, and these did not sync. Did all of them not sync?
I think at least until 0.5, it could not get to sync.
Right.
So. And that also reflects my own experience when I tried that in 2017.
Nodes older than 0.5 will not sync.
0.5 wouldn't sync either.
Right. Okay. So, and then we get into some of the reasons, as far as we can tell, because my reading of the blog post is not entirely clear every time why exactly. It's clear where the node stops syncing, but it's not necessarily clear why exactly it stops syncing. Is that right?
Yeah, but we can get into some of the reasons, and eventually we'll find out that with 0.5, like, I wasn't able to sync it all the way. He wasn't able to sync it all the way, but there's some recent developments that may still be ways to get it to sync.
Okay.
But we simply don't know yet.
Okay. So where does it stop, or what's the reason, as far as we know? What's the story here?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that, and those really all boil down to the theme of dependencies. So that's a fun topic always.
I think we discussed this in a previous episode, but maybe you should
very long time ago. So our very first episode, I think, or maybe the second episode, we talked about dependencies like OpenSSL. And how, you know, when those dependencies change,
just things very will break. Basic, what is a dependency?
Or a library, yeah. So dependency is a piece of software that you include in your software, basically. So in the case of OpenSSL, it's a very well-known dependency. It's a cryptographic library. So it means that Satoshi did not have to implement all of the elliptic curve cryptography. He could just use OpenSSL and let it handle all the cryptography.
Right. So OpenSSL is being developed by another group of developers, and their code is essentially used in Bitcoin Core.
That's right.
And then it's called a dependency, or the problem is if these other developers change something, that might affect your own software, right? That's sort of the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And this can be especially a problem when the dependency secretly, or not secretly, but like accidentally imposes rules that you don't know are rules.
Right.
And there's probably three different incidents of that historically, at least three.
You mean in Bitcoin or?
Yeah, in Bitcoin.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, in general, dependencies, of course, cause all sorts of headaches. I think it was in the news last week that somebody in the NPM, the Node Package Manager, which is a JavaScript library that a lot of Any website that looks even a little bit fancy probably uses that in the background. And it turns out that if you were a developer and you were based in Russia or Belarus, your computer would get wiped if you updated the dependency. So dependencies are a nightmare in general, but we won't go into too much detail about that nightmare.
Yeah, let's stick to the Bitcoin.
Yeah, so for Bitcoin, we can start with one dependency, which is called BerkeleyDB. BerkeleyDB is a database technology that was initially used to store, I think, information about the UTXO set, or at least information about Bitcoin transactions. So the node was using that dependency, which is built by other people. And when the Bitcoin blockchain was small, when blocks were small, every block would just add a bunch of transactions to the database. I'm kind of simplifying it partially because I don't know the precise details. But let's say a block contains 100 transactions, and it would just add those 100 transactions to the database, and the database would be happy. However, it turns out that if you crank up the number of transactions you start putting in the database, so if the blocks get bigger, at some point the database won't allow you to add these blocks. However, that never happened in practice because Bitcoin switched to a new database type in about 2013 called LevelDB.
Right.
Now, and this LevelDB, you know, it's much faster, and there was other reasons why it was better. But what happens is, at that point, blocks started getting even bigger, and LevelDB had no problem with it. But because we said we want to be backwards compatible, some people were still running nodes that used BerkeleyDB, and those nodes started causing problems because they started hitting those limits. And so the database would say, hey, this block is too large, kind of.
Right. So if a big block, and by big we mean 1 megabyte, I guess, or maybe close to 1 megabyte.
Yeah, or even 300 kilobytes. I don't know where it went wrong, but
whatever it was, if a big block would have been mined, say in 2012, would that have meant that Bitcoin core nodes, it wasn't even called Bitcoin core back then, Bitcoin nodes then would have crashed? Is that sort of what we're assuming?
They would have not have crashed, but they would have rejected the block.
Sorry,
but it was worse than
that
because it was not deterministic. So it's like some Bitcoin core nodes would have stopped and others would not have. So because you were hitting internal intricacies of the database package, it wasn't like a clear coded limit. You're just running into the internal magic. And so what ended up happening was a short change split where the decision was made to undo the update. And then everybody was told to either update to a new version of Bitcoin Core or change a slight setting in that database.
Right. But my question, and you've answered it, but just to be clear, essentially what you're saying is there was actually a problem in Bitcoin clients back then. We just never noticed it because all blocks were almost empty or very small.
Yeah.
And only if you start to try to sync it now that blocks are big, it's that the problem is really revealed. So there was kind of a bug in old nodes, right?
Yeah, but it got revealed as soon as they upgraded it. And my guess would be that, you know, the miners are also running the same software to create the blocks. And so they wouldn't have created those big blocks in the first place. So maybe that's why it happened at the same time. Or maybe, it could have been deliberate. But it turns out that had that upgrade not happened, we would have run into another bottleneck in that same software later on. And that's what both me and Jameson ran into, that if you keep running that old software...
Sorry, this is the same dependency. Also BerkeleyDB?
Yeah.
We're still talking about BerkeleyDB.
So if you stick to BerkeleyDB, if you decide, you know, you go back in your time machine to 2013, you say, you know what, I don't want to install this update. I'll just change this configuration as people recommend, and then I'll just keep going. If you do that, then I think in 2015 or something like that, you start running into blocks that will still crash your database. And that's the new development where I posted a question on Stack Overflow years and years ago asking, I can't get past this block with this old version of the software. Can anybody help? And nobody replied to that until yesterday. Andrew Chow actually replied to it and had some suggestions on how to get past those error messages. This is why it's still a mystery. It's possible that with a few other changes in the settings, it might still be able to reach the tip of the modern blockchain. But my guess is it will run into other limitations in that database because it's just not been tested with the giant blockchain that we have today.
Right. Okay, so again, like the previous example, essentially there was always a problem in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Code back then, and it was just never revealed because the blocks never were created that were big enough to actually reveal the problem.
Exactly.
It's only if you sync an old node that the problem will reveal itself. So we've had two of these problems, twice.
We've had one that people really notice it in the wild that caused an actual split, and we've had one that you can notice yourself if you try to use very old software.
Right, and you mentioned there might be even more if we get past this new block and someone tries thinking again and new problems. So basically, this BerkeleyDB database, that was kind of a problem and we got rid of it, and now the new nodes perform better for that reason.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, and so there's a second dependency that's been a cause of headaches, and we have discussed that one in the earlier podcast, that is OpenSSL.
We discussed it in this podcast, I think, a minute ago.
But specifically, the problem there is that OpenSSL, the very old versions of OpenSSL, so the ones that Satoshi installed, those were very permissive in terms of how the signature could be encoded. So you couldn't make a fake signature, but you could you know, the way you write a signature down, it could have like 75 characters or maybe more. And later versions of OpenSSL said, no, we're going to make it more precise. You have to only use, 73 characters for your signature and no more. And it happened to be, if I understand correctly, that there never was any signature with that many characters in practice. No, I think there was. So let me see if I get the problem. So so I think there was a signature that was bigger, but nobody ran into the problem because if you had installed an old version of Bitcoin Core back in the day, you would have had the old version of OpenSSL, and therefore you would have been able to sync just fine with these bigger signatures. But if now you try to install that old version today on a modern computer, you're going to have a modern version of OpenSSL, and you're going to produce a version of Bitcoin Core that will not accept these old blocks.
Right, yeah. So this is kind of the opposite problem as the previous one. The previous problem we just mentioned with Berkeley is essentially that Bitcoin Core clients were always, you know, they always had these bugs essentially, but the bugs were never revealed because blocks were never big enough to reveal them. Mm-hmm. And now the problem is kind of different because Jameson was doing these tests. He had to rebuild old clients. And while he was rebuilding the old Bitcoin Core clients, the only way he knew to do it I don't know how this works.
Yeah, he was using the most recent version of the dependencies.
Yeah, so then you get a new dependency. So now we have sort of the original dependency problem that I discussed, is that the dependency changes and now the original client doesn't work anymore. However, so here the problem would be the opposite way, that if you were still running that old software, you never changed it, you're still using your old computer from 2012 or whatever, you would still actually sync to the current blockchain because then you're also still using this old OpenSSL code, right?
Yeah, and in fact, there was a soft fork at some point that restricted the size of signatures in the consensus rules. But again, because it was a soft fork, your old node would be fine with the new rules, but it would not detect a violation of the new rules if somebody produced a signature that we no longer consider invalid. But there was, again, a transition period, I think, in might have been 2013 or even 2015, where this was actually a problem for people who were compiling their own nodes. They actually had to be careful to when they compile their own nodes to either use an old version of OpenSSL or apply a little patch to Bitcoin Core that would work around the newer versions of OpenSSL.
Right. Does this have anything to do with the 2013 blockchain split that actually happened for like six blocks?
No, that was the one we just talked about. That was a Berkeley DB.
Oh, that was a Berkeley DB problem.
And I think this is later. I think this is 2015, but I'm not sure. In any case, this was a problem in reality for people who compile their own nodes. It was not a problem for people who download the nodes, because the downloaded versions would all have the old version of OpenSSL in it, or the newer version would have the workaround in it.
Right.
So it was never a problem when you download Bitcoin Core. It is a problem when you compile it yourself, and it was even a problem back then.
Right. At the risk of getting sidetracked a little bit, would it be possible to, you know, basically rebuild an old client also using like an old library? I guess you'd have to find it somewhere, and that's the hard part then, or?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, a lot of the open source libraries are still available somewhere. It gets a bit more, I think that's what Jameson did. He did, he installed like a super old version of Ubuntu and then tried to also find some of the very old packages. But the problem is, of course, most operating systems that you would be building on will have the most recent versions of the libraries. And obviously you do not want to actually use a computer with an outdated version of OpenSSL, because you'd have hard bleeds and all these like very bad security vulnerabilities on your computer. But there are ways to do it, even safe ways to do it.
Right.
So this is a problem for, say, an historian like 1,000 years from now. If you're a historian and you want to really study Bitcoin in the old days, you're going to have a problem. Because 1,000 years from now, you'll probably still find the old source code of Bitcoin. But you'll have a very hard time building a computer, even a virtual computer, that will behave the same as a computer from today.
Right. So we've now discussed three reasons why old nodes stalled. I think there were three, right? Have we covered them all?
Yeah.
Right. So, just to reiterate, in two of these cases, they were actually bugs in the old code, essentially, right? Compared to, you can't sync to new blocks because Do we call them bugs? I would.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, all right. So in two cases, there were actually old bugs and old code that just weren't revealed until, you know, much later when no one was using it anymore, essentially. And then in one case, it was because of the dependency changed.
Yeah.
And the old code would have actually synced to the new blockchain.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the next part of the podcast then, which is syncing. So syncing is probably one of the main user experience bottlenecks. Can we call it that? Like,
yeah, because it's the first thing you do when you install Bitcoin, when you install Bitcoin Core. And the first thing you do is sit and wait for a long time.
Yeah.
And so it's not a great experience.
Yeah.
Unless you really like progress bars.
Yeah. And the reason for that is, of course, because you're essentially rechecking or learning about the entire history of the blockchain. You're downloading and checking the entire history of the blockchain in order to get up to date with, you know, what's the state of Bitcoin today? Who owns what?
Exactly. Right? And in earlier episodes, we've talked about some ways to either speed that up or to skip it altogether with things like assume UTXO. But for now, and probably for the foreseeable future, yeah, you need to check every single block, not just to know if it's correct, even just to know which coins actually exist.
Right. And the goal for every new Bitcoin Core release is essentially to make this a bit faster, I think. Or, you know,
For every Bitcoin Core release, but there's this repeating theme. It's not even a goal. It's just that it gets better, you know, very often with little changes or with bigger changes.
Yeah. Well, actually, when we say better,
faster.
Yeah, well, when we say faster, and I guess this is part of the research, the thing is, by the time there's a new Bitcoin Core release, the blockchain itself has also become bigger.
Yes.
So does it actually take more time year over year to sync, or do the performance improvements keep up? That's sort of one of the questions.
There have been times when the performance improvements kept up. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Right.
So it is getting worse. So there's a couple of things that are good. There's Moore's Law. That means new hardware is just faster. So if you have a new computer, you'll sync faster. If you have more RAM, you'll sync faster. Faster disk. And the other is these improvements. But in the long run, and yeah, it's very hard for them. I think when I looked at it in 2017, it was basically just almost constant. Despite dramatic improvements in the performance of the code, it was just getting, it was taking about as long. But of course, the hardware is getting faster too. And, you know, when Jameson and I were running these tests, we were running the same modern hardware to run the tests on, just to have a bit of a fair comparison. But I think, you know, people like Luke Dasher have done projections on it, like how long is it going to take until it actually starts getting faster, just based on Moore's Law. And I think the estimates are like 2040 or later, when this growth in the blockchain is no longer as bad. It won't outpace anymore the Moore's Law.
Yo, what is going on, guys? We are proud to have Voltage as a sponsor of this episode. How many of you developers out there have wanted a streamlined infrastructure provider for your particular project? Well, I'll tell you what, Voltage is the Bitcoin infrastructure provider you have been looking for that makes building on Bitcoin quick and easy, whether it's Bitcoin nodes, Lightning nodes, BTC Pay, and so much more. But don't take it from me. Just ask the guys over at Amboss, Sphinx, Podcast Index, and Thunder Games, and so many others that you guys already know and love. Their enterprise-grade products make it fast and easy to build, deploy, and scale your next project. So make it easy on yourself. Even normie plebs can use the dashboard or API. Don't wait before the next block confirmation. Let your team focus on building great products and let Voltage handle all the rest. Voltage is your go-to zero management Bitcoin infrastructure solution. Yo, what is going on, plebs? We're going to take a break from our programming to tell you about the resurrection of our print magazine, starting with the El Salvador issue. Starting this fall, Bitcoin Magazine will be available on newsstands nationwide and at retail stores such as Barnes and Noble. Don't want to get off your couch, though? No problem. You can also go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com. So skip the line and get each issue shipped directly to your front door with our annual subscription. I'm talking 4 issues a year that contain exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, along with powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Subscribe today and get 21% off using code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST, podcast at checkout.
Okay, sure. So tell our listeners something interesting about this. How long does it take to think?
So that really depends on your computer and how well you configure it, the Bitcoin Core node. So with the default settings, it's not as fast as it can be. There was a test by Jonas Schnelli, the Bitcoin Core, or former Bitcoin Core developer and a maintainer. And he, I think 2 years ago, he got a Apple M1 chip, so one of those Mac minis. But he only had 4 gigabytes of RAM. And the first time he tried it, he was able to sync the whole chain in 12 hours, I think. And then somebody suggested a few better settings to him, and it was 6 hours. So that was like state-of-the-art hardware, 6 hours, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if he had used more RAM, he might have been able to do it a little bit faster, maybe in 4 hours. But if you have a super slow Raspberry Pi, it might take you 2 or 3 weeks.
Sure. And
if you're running, a web server, so one of, you know, if say you want to install a BTC Pay server somewhere, and you want on that server to sync the node from scratch, it's gonna take you weeks, because these web servers typically are very low performance. Once it's caught up, it's fine. Like it'll catch up with all the new blocks, but catching it up from the Genesis block, it has low memory. Usually, only has like 1 or 2 CPUs, and it's all virtual, so it's pretty horrible.
Yeah, this is one of these things that you really kind of want to see in a graph, and I'll try to remember to include the links to the actual blog posts in the show notes. But can you tell us anything interesting about the improvements over the years?
Yeah,
like how much has it improved? Or
pretty dramatic. So one of the I think Jameson found like a factor of 40, depending on how you measure it.
40, since when?
Since these very old versions.
Since like
2012.
0.4 or whatever, yeah. Okay.
But it's probably more than that. And there's a couple of reasons. Some you might call cheating, but it's not, because it actually improves the experience for the user. So we did an episode about assume valid, which is where we basically, the developers pick a block that's before a release, and then the Bitcoin Core node doesn't verify the signatures. Up until that block, it verifies everything else, but not the signatures, and that saves, factor 2 at least.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call that cheating, but it's definitely a shortcut.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can turn it off if you don't like it for all these reasons, but it speeds things up a lot. Another improvement was, we talked about it, LevelDB. So switching from BerkeleyDB, the database that had all these problems, but it was also slower, to LevelDB.
By the way, you just mentioned, sorry, I'm yep. interrupting you, but on the previous point, you mentioned assume valid, but Jameson actually did not assume valid, right? He intentionally left that out for the reason that it is a shortcut and he wants to make a fair comparison, which I think was that's how
it's a reasonable thing, and that's also what I did.
So you mentioned a 40x improvement, but that's without assume valid. So with assume valid, it would be even more.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah,
I think so. And I did that in my blog post from 2017. I did two things. I think I showed the difference between assume valid and not assume valid, and it was quite dramatic. And then I also showed the differences, you know, with assume valid turned off between the older and the newer versions, which was also dramatic. So in terms of things that were improved, like we said, assume valid, LevelDB. Another thing is, this is done many, many years ago, validating signatures in parallel. So if you're validating a block, one of the things you need to do is actually check the signatures. And if you have multiple processor cores on your computer, which you probably do, one of the improvements was just to make these multiple processors verifying multiple signatures at the same time.
Right. So that obviously doesn't help if you use assume valid, or at least it doesn't help until that
exactly.
assume valid. But after that it works, or if you have assume valid switched off, then it helps
as well. In general, when you're syncing the node, you'll notice with the default settings, you'll notice in the beginning it's mostly disk usage. And then after a while, your CPU starts getting really hot. That's when you go past the assume valid block, your CPU starts running at 100% and gets really hot.
Right.
Because then it has to validate all these signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was done that was probably at least marginal, but maybe even more, is just the download blocks in parallel. So rather than, you know, getting one block at a time, you would get more of them at the same time from multiple peers.
Right.
That we talked about that. The other, I think, is almost a 5x improvement was getting rid of OpenSSL and using LibSecP256K1 that we did a whole episode on.
Oh, yeah. So we haven't mentioned that, but so that's an entirely, like, that's a Bitcoin native library, right?
Or yeah, it basically,
am I describing that right?
Yeah, it's basically, instead of using OpenSSL for all the signatures, it uses LibSecP, which Peter Weiler wrote at the time. And it was initially designed as a performance improvement, but it also helped dealing with these bugs that we just talked about. So kind of nice.
Got rid of OpenSSL altogether, and that's also an performance improvement. It's also faster.
Yes, exactly. Another thing that happened in, I think, 2017 was that the UTXO database, just the database structure was changed. It's in the way it was, you know, if you structure a database in a more intelligent way, it can perform better.
Right.
That, I think, was in turn the cause of this very scary inflation bug in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's nice to improve performance, but you want to be extremely careful. But I think this performance improvement was actually necessary because the performance was so bad that somebody could attack Bitcoin by exploiting the bad performance. Right.
How?
By just creating very unfavorable transactions so that nodes get slower and slower and slower.
That would get so slow that it takes longer to verify a block than to create a block, essentially.
I guess that would be the absolute worst case. Blocks come in every 10 minutes. So if a node cannot verify a block within 10 minutes, you're doomed. I don't think it was that bad.
Well, there were some older clients. I read this maybe in a Reddit comment behind under one of these blog posts that some of the very old clients would actually have that problem now. Couldn't sync because it just takes too long to download and verify a block. And by that time, there's more blocks.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. And keep in mind that these would also be running on older hardware. Right. So if you started a node and you put it in your nuclear bunker and you can't get back into your nuclear bunker, then at some point it's just not going to be able to keep up anymore. Let's see another one. There's lots of very small improvements. There's not even a complete list of them. But like, for example, part of the block consists of checking hashes. This is SHA-256 hashes.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that many modern computer chips have special instructions on them to do SHA-256. They don't have those instructions because the chip makers like Bitcoin, but because SHA-256 is used in a lot of places.
Right.
And so if you actually take advantage of those special instructions, which involves writing some machine code, then it'll get faster. And I think very recently, one of those things was done for ARMv8 chips, which are used in Raspberry Pis, but also used in the Apple M1 chip. So that'll probably speed it up.
But you're talking about hardware now. Has there been Bitcoin Core code released that takes advantage of this?
Yeah, exactly. So when a specific chip has a feature that could make Bitcoin Core faster, then Bitcoin Core developers could, if they want to, write special machine code for that chip. So the software, when you compile it, will just check whether or not you have this chip.
And they did, or you're not sure?
Yeah, they have. I mean, right. It's been done over time for different chips for different optimizations.
Got it.
Right. So the most recent one I'm aware of is for this ARMv8, which I think is what's used by the Apple M1 and by many modern Raspberry Pis, maybe not the old ones. Another thing, I don't know, some magic math thing in LibSecP that made 15% faster signature validation. Those things, I can't review them because I just see magic.
Yeah.
The only thing I can see is like, hey, the test still passed and I can still sync the blockchain without getting a consensus error. So I guess it's correct.
I think SegWit could be considered an improve. Well,
no, it's a mitigation of not making it worse. So the block size was increased with SegWit, but the damage caused by that block size increase was mitigated because the SegWit rules put some restrictions on the transaction they can put into it. Because basically, I think there's some things that you can do in transactions that take quadratic time to validate. So if you add 5 of these things, it's 25 times more expensive to verify it. And I think SegWit got rid of those problems so that you can double the block size and only double the time it takes to validate rather than quadruple or, you know, 8x the time it takes.
Right. Well, that's not what I was referring to. What I was referring to, actually, this was one of the things that Lop mentioned in his blog post, is that actually older nodes will sync faster post the SegWit activation point.
Well, because they don't verify any of the signatures for SegWit.
Right. But it still counts, don't you think? Well, it's also kind of a shortcut, but...
Yeah, but I mean, if you want to go that route, I can think of some even scarier proposals where we just, you know, make all the blocks empty for all nodes and just put the real transactions somewhere else.
Now that you mentioned empty blocks, that's also maybe interesting to mention.
That's definitely a way to make really fast validation.
The first, I think, 200,000 blocks, so basically the first 4 years. For the first 4 years, it doesn't really matter that much which node you're running because all blocks were empty anyways, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it got a little bit better. The newer nodes are even better at running through empty blocks.
Yeah,
but generally, when you start up a node, the first couple hundred thousand blocks will fly by in 15 minutes, and then it just starts taking a really long time.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, so you've listed a number of performance improvements over time.
Yep.
And do you want to keep going?
No, that was the whole list I had.
Okay.
But there's probably more out there.
Yeah, Bitcoin Core developers are squeezing out new improvements.
Yeah, but it's getting more and more marginal. I mean, if you make a 5% improvement, but the chain gets 20% bigger, then, you know, it's not enough.
Okay, sure. Well, I guess that's the podcast then, or not?
Yep, I think so. So, thank you for listening to Bitcoin Explained.
There you go.